From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words we don't want to talk about anymore. Seriously, just get them out of here. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey guys, a lot to get to today. Before we get started, I want to thank a couple of people for leaving some wonderful reviews for us on the Apple Podcasts app. Thank you, Timothy J. Castle, who said, "This is my Saturday morning tradition. It's a great break from the news, and there are always several words that I didn't know how to spell or that always give me trouble in terms of meaning and or pronunciation." Thanks, Timothy. It sounds like Timothy is learning a lot from the show and, yeah, you know, providing some kind of little break from the punishing news every day is
yes, definitely.
Certainly valuable. Also, thanks to Kara Girl, I think, Kara, K-A-R-A hyphen girl, says this is a break from the world, so we've got a little theme going here. I love listening to the gang to laugh and learn. It's not only fun and informative, but a much-needed break from the stress of daily life. I look forward anxiously to the new episode every week. Keep up the great work. Thank you to Kara Girl as well. We appreciate that. And obviously, yeah, a theme developing there. We are glad to provide some kind of respite from what is happening all over the world every day. It's hard to get through. And if you can laugh a little bit while you're learning, then we're happy.
We're very happy.
So speaking of listeners, we also got a listener email regarding what we talked about last week a little bit with the Saints, not the New Orleans Saints, as far as I know.
Yes, it was Kelly from Nebraska said, and this was interesting. She said, "I thought of a saint lurking, hidden in English that you did not mention when you listed Benedictine, St. Bernard, St. Elmo's Fire, and St. Vitus's Dance. This one is buried a little more deeply. Most of the word saint has eroded away, leaving only its final phoneme behind. I'm talking about tawdry, which comes from St. Audrey."
I had no idea.
Yes, it didn't occur to us.
This was interesting, though. I thought we had actually done something on it. Because here's the weird thing. We must not have done it on the show. And I'm not defending us because we clearly missed it. But we got the email and I immediately said, "Oh, St. Audrey's Lace" to myself, as did Kathy. And we did not mention it. So therefore, we're in a weird way, we're doubly wrong. We may have known it and we didn't remember it, which is terrible.
So, it's tawdry. No, it's not. No. But
so I have to say a thank you from Kelly, to Kelly for letting us know. And she's right. Tawdry stands for St. Audrey's Lace. And people used to wear the lace when they would go to Eli, I think, where she was the patron saint. And they would wear this lace, but they were usually poor country folk. And then it became known as something kind of poor people wear. It's sort of St. Audrey's lace. Oh, it's kind of there.
And then it was cheap finery. It was like a sort of tacky lace. It wasn't like that fancy kind that the upper crust people wore.
And then it turned into sort of what it is now, which is, I guess not exactly trashy, but kind of in a risque way.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. But back then it was just more just not of the high class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But the one horrible thing, which we looked up, actually, I didn't know, neither of us knew this, was that St. Audrey apparently was very stylish when she was young. And apparently she died of a throat tumor. And the chronicler Bede said that was because God was mad at her for being stylish when she was young.
Goodness gracious, Bede. Come on.
I know.
That's not very venerable. That's just mean. So thank you, Kelly.
Yes, thanks.
It did give us pause.
That is very cool. I had no idea.
And now another email. We had to include it because it's a topic dear to our hearts. It's from our pal, New York Tim, again. He's been busy lately. And he wrote, because we did, both Ross and I reacted. He wrote, "If pet peeves ever come back, I'd like to propose curate when it means edit." Ross is like already clenching his teeth.
Oh, I am. I really am.
He said, I just received an email with a newsletter that was curated by someone. I instantly deleted it.
Before we go on, I have to confess something. Many years ago, we went to lunch with an editor who shall remain nameless.
Oh,
Kathy's already, yeah.
Yeah. No, he said, you know, as a curator of books.
Oh.
And I thought, here's my confession. I thought, what an interesting, unique way of saying editor. And I was impressed with it for about a week or two. And then I heard curating all over the place. So.
In fairness, I don't think it was quite as widely used then.
Thanks, Kath. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Can you describe what a curator traditionally actually does? Because this word is used for lots of different reasons all over the place these days, and I think some people might not be familiar with what a curator is or does.
Well, it was you were in charge of, you managed a museum, an art gallery, an exhibit of some sort. It came from what curate is the spiritual aspect,
yes.
Right, Russ? Which I don't quite understand that. Oh, because you're taking care of souls.
You're taking care.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically from a Latin word, which basically means taking care of, et cetera. And especially medical usage would have been the key. Curare would be to cure, to care, to cure for.
Yeah.
And then curate, you know, which is a spiritual guardian. It moved into like parish priest, mm-hmm. a curate. Overseer or guardian, and then from there it came into museums, mm-hmm. you know, curators.
Yeah, so it's not just somebody who like edits a show, but you're taking care of all of the pieces.
Yeah, you're overseeing, you're in charge of this entire collection,
right,
if you will.
Right, right.
Yeah, I have no problem with it for museums. against my earlier statement. Listen to this one here. This is on, by the time a student gets to college, he spent a decade curating a bewilderingly diverse resume. Come on here.
What is this curating a resume too? Do you mean that he just has a lot of things he did?
It doesn't really mean anything. But I mean, that's the problem, right? I don't really have a problem with a word changing meaning a little bit. The problem is it just loses its meaning. Like, we don't really know what anybody means. It's kind of along the same lines as bespoke now. I mean, we see that so much.
Yeah.
And bespoke has pretty much lost meaning too.
Yeah.
My problem is it's like, because it kind of, to me, sort of dovetails with influencer. To me, it's become the same sort of psychobabble, but you know, marketing babble. And it's taking something really basic and trying to make it sound fancy.
Yeah.
Here I go again with the fancy,
yeah,
but it is.
Yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
You develop a menu. You don't curate a menu. You pick food for the menu. I mean, I'm sorry. That's it.
You're a cook or a chef or whatever. Kathy said influencer, and that's what I was just about to say. There are now things called celebrity curators and influencer curators.
God.
And I mean, you know, like, they become tastemakers who curate their own lives, is what they say.
<I'm> sorry. Okay, how do you curate your own life? I mean, what else? I mean, I assume I'm the curator of myself to some degree.
Yeah, right.
I'm me.
That's exactly what it is. But it seems, I mean, like, in that sense, I really don't know what it's supposed to mean. But other ways, it just kind of means you picked stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I kind of get it, because when people think of a museum curator, they're not usually thinking about someone who takes care of everything and manages everything. They're thinking about the person who picked the stuff to put on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Even though
managing it, though.
Well, okay. An educated person such as yourself, Russ, may think of it in the broader sense. No, I mean it. But like, I think generally when people hear, when you hear from a curator, that curator is usually talking to you about an exhibition and the stuff that's in it. They're not talking to you about the other stuff. So, like,
I do think of them as putting it together, though. Actually,
okay.
In that case, I do think. I mean, I think, like, I see it as, and even when I was a kid or something, I just see it as someone who's doing the whole collection.
Mm-hmm.
It's like aware of it all, and I think that's a good use of curator.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying most people probably don't necessarily know the entire broad scope of what a curator does. And when they're hearing about a curator in a museum, they're hearing about the person.
They're thinking of that exhibit.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So I kind of get how that would extend to picking stuff, you know, even though that's clearly, we know, not the actual definition. But even just picking stuff, it has now become, you know, your your life curator. Like, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, no, it just gets, yeah.
It just, it makes me ill. I'm sorry. Life curator just is like, yeah. Already I'm getting angry here. I really am. No, it's too much. It started getting big. I was just looking at around 2009, 2010 was when they said they started seeing a real surge in it. That's when it really spilled out from like your museums, your art galleries into the wider bad usage. And now forget about it.
Yeah, the New Republic had an interesting comment. They said it's gained popularity in the context of increased consumerism and later in the digital age where curation now serves as a way to give meaning to an abundance of or an overload of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of it that way. Whatever, Merriam-Webster says it's overused too, so we have some allies there.
I don't know, Ross, it's a life curator here. I'm not sure.
Well, you could argue we're word curators right now.
Oh, I hate it. I really do. I'm with Tim. New York Tim.
I am too.
Love you for that one.
Okay, so speaking of curate, we didn't do last week the 2026 banished word lists. And I think we can all agree curate should probably be, let's say, partly banished. Mm-hmm. I think, do we agree on that?
Yeah, we can keep it when we're talking about actual curators.
Right.
I think.
Exactly. Kathy, do you want to curate the next section here and explain it?
Oh, would you?
I shall, Ross. Thank you. this is the every year the last five years, the Lake Superior State University, and we've done them in the past, this is the 50th year, not the fifth year.
Oh, yeah.
And they put out every year for the 50 years, they've done the banished words list. It was started out as a party idea, and it became a thing about words that they just think it's time. It's like they've run their course. And it's not necessarily the word itself, the usage of certain words,
yeah,
I should
say. Yeah,
that's
a good saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have this year's, and these are words that are culled from the public. People submit them. They don't just sit down like us and say, curate. They ask the public, send in your suggestions, and then they pick the tops. So ready?
Let's do it.
Let's see if we all agree or disagree.
First one, 6-7.
Oh, no, of course not. I mean, it's going to fade out. If it's not already, it's going to fade out very quickly on its own. We should not banish that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Well, people are already not using it, you know? Although I did see an ad recently with Riz, and it reminded me of one of our fetch hosts, and I thought, I haven't seen Riz in ages. Yeah. So it's like, where'd
that
come
from? It's
funny
you say that. I heard it the other day, and I had the same reaction you did. I thought, that's weird. I thought I was over it at this point.
Well, it is, I'm sure.
The only thing I did like about 6-7 is some commenter sent into the SSU. It's time for 6-7 to be 86.
That's
cute.
Yeah.
You know, and if somehow people don't know what 6-7 is, it's just sort of a nonsense phrase that kids yell now. And not even now. I said now. It's probably fading away. I'll have to ask my mother. She still teaches middle schoolers.
Oh, that'd be interesting. Ask her. And let us know next week, Fletcher. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Word number two. This is another one that is already gone, as far as I'm concerned. Demure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I agree. What about cooked? My brain feels cooked.
I'm fine with cooked. I don't have a problem with cooked in. I mean, yeah. My brain is cooked. He's cooked. That means he's no longer going to be relevant in this context.
I have the same feeling. I don't mind it at all.
I like it.
Yeah.
Actually.
I do too.
Okay. Massive. Massive. Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah, they say way overused, often incorrectly. I don't.
No, I think that's fine. I don't really hear that. I mean, like, it's just there. It's a word. What?
Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I know technically it means like huge and everything, but I use massive. Like, you go, what a massive surprise. You know?
Yeah. I had a massive amount of homework yesterday. Whatever. I think it's fine.
No, I have no problem with that.
No, nothing either. I agree. Okay, incentivize. That I'm out.
That's,
get it.
That feels like one of those businessy type jargon words.
Yeah.
I'm not okay with incentivize.
I don't like it.
No, I'm with you. That can be banned.
Yep.
As for me, the next can be banned as well. Full stop.
Oh, yeah. You've mentioned how much you dislike that one before, Kathy. I don't hear it as much as the two of you apparently do. I don't really hear people say full stop that much. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a Midwest thing and people are just still saying period around here. I don't know.
No, yeah, I hear it. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Well, to me, that's part of that fake British thing that a lot of people have. I think they think it sounds, again, I go back to my fancy thing, the problem I have with that sort of thing. And I think people think full stop sounds sort of like, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely British Commonwealth stuff. Yeah, full
stop. Yeah, I hate it. I detest it.
Okay, perfect. What do you guys think of perfect?
Okay, read the comments on that, Ross, because that's interesting.
It doesn't bother me. There are very few instances when the word actually applies. Often heard during customer service interactions. How do they know it's perfect? What does that mean? I don't have a problem with it. You know, like you go kind of I'd like to order I've heard that even at restaurants. I like to order the pasta. Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And then they put it down.
Yeah.
No problems.
This is a thing where the word is not meant to be taken literally and people are having trouble with that. And that's
I use it a lot.
Perfect. Yeah. So Fletcher, we'll see you tomorrow. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Just say it like that. Mm-hmm.
I do it fairly often, I would guess.
The next one I actually agree with. I don't care for it. It's a noun being used as a verb. We've talked about this before. Gift or gifted. I gifted him the blah, blah, blah. And I know you guys don't have as much of a problem with it as I, because you both said there's a finger.
I understand it, but I don't like it.
The one thing, I agree with you guys on this, but the one thing that does get me, I was thinking about this last night. I gave Kathy a computer. I gifted Kathy a computer. There's a slightly different meaning to me. One is I gave it to her. You know, hey, Kath, here's my old computer. The other is I wrap it up and I gave it to her as a gift. I gifted her. I don't use the gifted at all, and it bothers me. But I'm beginning to think it's going to evolve into a different meaning where it does actually have a
validity.
Mm-hmm. A validity. Yeah, think of it. I gifted you, instantly know it's a gift, a real gift. I gave it to her, I kind of, shoved it over, whatever.
Yeah, like I said, I get it.
Yeah.
But I really don't like it. I would rather use more words. I would rather say I gave Kathy a computer as a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than I would say I gifted Kathy a computer. I just don't like it. It feels gross to me.
I agree.
Yeah, I have the same thing. It makes me feel dirty.
I agree, but I do think it's going to become, I'll bet you, let's come back here on the show 50 years from now, and we'll hear it.
Will be interesting. The next one I don't even think about. My bad.
Oh, God.
They say it doesn't convey much meaning in the way of an apology. Oh, my bad. I have no problem with my bad. I don't use it, but...
That's been around for like 30 years or something. I mean, probably more.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me.
No, my bad is fine. I don't even know who brought that one up.
Yeah. The final one, I'm curious about you guys, because I'm back and forth on this. The last one is reach out. And they say that it was first banished in 1994. So this is like obviously appeared many times on their list. And it said this saying has strayed from the positive message it once intended to deliver. What started as a phrase with emotional support overtones has now become absurdly overused. Reach out.
This is one for me where officially I hate it. Unofficially, I use it a lot. So.
Yep.
I hate it too. But I'm your sister. I mean, I'm on your side with this because recently I heard myself saying, I should really reach out to so and so. And I was
I heard
like,
you,
oh, good God.
I actually heard you, Kathy, I think it was on Thursday, say exactly that.
Really? Yeah, no,
yes.
No, God.
I did. I didn't say anything.
Unclean.
But I thought, she said
unclean.
Reach out too. I felt a lot better. I'm using it. She uses it.
Okay. One more email. This was Duff from California forwarded us an article that was pretty fun. It was a little word article about why don't we use willent, which got us going. So, Ross, do you want to explain why don't we use willent?
Well, why not?
when you're saying willent, you mean like will not, right? A contraction?
Right.
Yeah.
Why do we say, this is a contraction conundrum, actually. Why don't we say willent, because we do, we contract everything else, except for a couple we're going to go into. But the key thing is it should by just how it works, it should be will it. So why don't we do it?
Why won't instead?
Yeah, why do we do won't?
Because that's what we use.
Won't instead of willn't, right?
Why do we use won't? There's a lot, there are some theories about it. One theory which I thought was sort of interesting was that when you say will, the L, your tongue hits the top, it's palate. It hits the top of your mouth. And when you say un, it hits the top of your mouth. So one linguistic idea is that willn't, you're kind of like kind of doing it twice, and you need to little put a little something willn't in between, and it got to be a real pain. That was one linguistic theory, and it
may I interrupt
it,
though?
Yeah,
it doesn't seem hard to me. No. That's why I just wanted to break in
there. It's funny. I took a note of this before, and I put Kathy's going to say it's not very difficult. I'm not kidding.
I kid you not. Oh God! But say it, willn't. I don't have any problem.
Willn't. That is one. That is one theory. Mm-hmm. That is only one theory. I think it might have a little bit of truth to it. Willn't, 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 willn't. The other one is, which goes on to that, is that in effect the L, it may not be as difficult to pronounce, but the L basically disappears. Like say willn't like 10 times.
Willn't,
willn't, willn't, willn't. It does get a little bit, the L gets kind of like kloogy in there. It's hard to say, I think. I think that works.
I willn't go to the game with you.
I willn't go. I willn't go.
I willn't go.
I willn't go. It ends up getting slightly assimilated is one theory. Hmm. Kathy, you want to go into your favorite theories?
Okay. One of my favorite is it's not a pronunciation issue, which as I already cut you off and had to explain, I have no issue with, is that won't comes from wonot, W-O-N-N-O-T. It was shortened from that, which was formed from wall, W-O-L, which was a variant form of will and not. So you had wolnot became wonot became won't.
But Kathy, not to interject with you now, but it's the same thing. You're dropping the L.
Right.
I think the key thing, and will and wol both are the same. The vowel preceding the L is there either way. The key thing really is the L is dropped. So if you're saying wol not, it was wol or will, the key aspect here, I think, is that the L disappears.
I see what you're saying.
I think it does explain the O. It does explain the O in not wih. That's
right.
True. But
right.
I think it does kind of go backwards to say the L in both cases drops out.
Okay, I think I'll give you that.
Thank you. And a lot of linguists are happy too.
I salute them.
We've also got your favorite, Kathy, Ament.
Yes, we're getting to all these because Ament I still think should be used. And there's no, to my mind, there's no reason that Ament is hard to say, is there?
Not really. I Ament.
Yeah, I Ament.
Well, it's still used, and I was looking at a couple of things earlier. It's still used a lot of times in Ireland and Scotland, and it's completely acceptable.
Hmm.
And people saying they grew up with saying Ament, and then they came out into the real world outside of, not the real world, the non-Scottish world.
Uh-huh.
So, we have a lot of Scots relatives, so I'm going to quickly answer that. But they came out into the non-Scottish or Irish world, and they heard Arnt, and they switched over. I don't think Ament is a problem at all. I don't at all.
No, but what I have read also is that one theory is that it got frowned upon because it was not like, it wasn't fancy, using one of my favorite words. And they're saying to a great degree because it came from a lot of Cockneys used Ament. And it was like that dialect was considered, you know, frowned upon. So Ament was pushed to the side.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and a lot of times, but the interesting thing is a lot of people didn't like Joseph Addison in The Spectator in the 1700s said he really didn't like contractions at all. He said contractions like won't and others have untuned our language and they've clogged it with consonants. So I think Ament may also have been sort of cloggy.
Oh, man.
Kind of a sclerotic sort of language or something like that.
Grease the wheels with more vowels in there.
Yeah. I know.
I still think Ament is, I think it's a great word. I know I've said it before. I mean, I know you can say I'm not, which is shorter. I'm not Ament. Ament is much clean, but you say I Ament.
Right.
So I Ament, I'm not.
The weird thing about that whole thing, though, is you can't say I aren't going. You can say I'm not going. aren't I? It's weird. Mm-hmm. You can say, I'm not going, am I not? But you can't say, aren't going. It's so weird how that works.
So aren't I is actually ungrammatical.
Are but not I.
Yeah, yeah, that's ungrammatical. It's grammatically incorrect, even though we use it, you know, as okay. But you're not allowed to say am and ain't.
Yeah, but you can't. But you can. And you can say I aren't. But you can't. Aren't I? But you can't say I aren't. Yeah,
I aren't. I'm going to start saying I aren't. Am it I?
And that's what really interested me with language, how it works, because we're basically, in effect, using something like it's not correct, and we're using it, and now it is correct.
Funny.
And people are basically violating their own, you know, people who are really strict prescriptivists who say, this is how it should be, are basically now violating the basic rule, aren't they?
Amn't they?
Ain't
aren't
they
I
was.
Talking about this?
But that's okay, because ain't was originally acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I mean, it was until the mid-1700s, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Ain't was fine. And then it started becoming banned. Again, we go back to the register, if you will. The quality of people decided that, like, ain't was lower class and aren't I, which is incorrect, was fine.
Yeah, ain't actually, I mean, someone said it here, which I thought was really interesting. Ain't is a really good multitasker. I like that word.
Mm-hmm.
And the person used the example, I ain't no tractor, which means I am not a tractor. I don't know why they chose tractor, but we'll leave it there. I ain't got no tractor. I haven't got any tractor. I mean, so it can be used both ways. That is, ain't no tractor here. There isn't a tractor here. It fills all of those usages. And the interesting thing to me and to Kathy is that it's instantly understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very useful.
Yeah.
I grew up, you know, frowning upon it as you do, but I've come to realize that it's very useful in certain ways. You know, it's not the sort of thing probably that you're going to say in a formal address or something like that, but when you're speaking very casually and you want to get a certain idea across, it can be really useful.
Mm-hmm.
It can. I don't use it. I was drummed out of, I was drummed out of me as a kid. I mean, I remember as a kid, do you remember that, Kath? Mom, basically, you were bad if you used ain't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you do not use ain't, ever. It's bad people use it or something. I don't know.
I do use it, but I use it for comical. You know what I mean? I ain't,
yeah,
you
I
know.
Would do the same thing. Yeah.
That, but that's a very different thing. I mean, that's
that
like
is.
A wink, wink, ain't.
Yeah,
it's not...
no, that's what I use. I don't use it as like, I ain't no tractor. Not that I would ever say that.
That's what I was going to say. I ain't no tractor either, Ross.
No, you ain't a tractor. We ain't tractors. None of us.
I also ain't got no tractor.
But that's what I mean. That's what I mean about how it's useful. I mean, you use it for effect. You know, you're not just using it in your regular speech. Some people do, obviously. And as with you guys, it wasn't even drummed out of me. It was never allowed into me. But you can use it for effect, and I'm sure the two of you do. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. One thing I kept finding was Dickens was one of the main reasons we don't use am and ain't, because Dickens was one of the key players in making it like this is like the uneducated use this, not people like us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't think Dickens, I think people were taking Dickens to defend Dickens here. And I like Dickens. I think he was basically writing what he heard. I don't think he was actually casting aspersions on the use. I think that's people reading that into
this. I agree with you. Yeah, because they were saying, these lower class people are saying ain't. An upper class person reading my Dickens, would never say that because I am not like this, this scullery maid or this beadle.
We have no idea if that's true or not, though. So, I mean, you know, we don't know what Dickens actually thought, but my reading of him, I get that feeling. That's all
I think you're right. I'll give you that.
Oh, we had one more thing, too. This was interesting. I ran across this in a linguistic forum. They asked the question, and I want to hear what you guys think of this. What's the difference between you're not and you ain't? As in, you're not coming home and you ain't coming home. I do realize that ain't is a contraction of are not, but still. Do you think there's a difference?
Yeah. Depending on the sentence, contextually, I think there can be. You're
okay,
not
so
and you
explain
ain't.
It then, Kat.
Okay, to me, you're not coming home means you're not going to come home. You ain't coming home means I'm not letting you come home, to me.
Yep, exactly. That's what I hear, too.
Yeah.
What about you,
Fletcher?
Yeah,
that's exactly what I would think.
That's, again, I mean, that's the real problem with I think George Bernard Shaw said it, you're never going to ever be fluent in another language. Because we, all three of us, instantly knew what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you explain that? I mean, you know, there are thousands of those tiny little, little teeny nuances of meaning that you're never going to get if you, you know.
It's very true and sad. It drives me crazy here because I know, like, I love to pun and I'm never going to be able to pun here. Really.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So all the expats have to listen to me pun. I have to get it out.
Yeah, I always constantly bring up, I was reading, to Kath and I've talked about it and I bore everyone at length with it, but what the end of one of Agatha Christie's books ends with a pun. And I read the French translation of the book, and they completely missed the pun.
Oh.
And it really got me because it sort of made the whole ending really good.
Yeah.
Remember that, Kath? I told you about it.
I always think of that when I read a book that's been translated or when I watch a movie that has subtitles. Like, how much am I missing, really? And it's usually probably a lot.
A lot, yeah.
I definitely think so. Because it gets me when sometimes we watch things with in Spanish with English subtitles. Oh no, vice versa. And the subtitle Spanish is missing like a ton. Or they're you know, again, we go back to nuance, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot not there.
Which really gets me, because you're right. What are you going to do? Like, you're going to read Anna Karenina, and I mean, I'm not going to learn Russian.
Yeah.
But you're never going to really understand the book in some ways.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Not one of my favorites anyway, so.
I don't like it either.
Maybe it's because you haven't read it in Russian, Kathy.
That's it. Uh-oh.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Maybe you already know about naked short selling. Maybe you've personally shorted stocks yourself. But do you know about the time short sellers ruined a Super Bowl, basically?
For me, I was a little late, but red flags went up like, what is going on? This is really scary.
At Planet Money, we get the story behind the money to explain how money works. Listen on the NPR app or wherever you get your podcasts.